We close this evening's reading with a reading by Robert Duncan, who is the author of, among many, many books, the author of Heavenly City, Earthly City, published in 1947, Bending the Bow, New Directions, 1968, and a book that I personally like very much, The Truth and Life of Myth, 1968. Robert Duncan.
I'm going to open by reading the seven of a set of etudes, transcriptions from prose works of Dante. They're etudes in the sense of piano etudes of composers I've been listening to intensively for 2 years or so, Robert Schumann and Liszt and other retrograde and long worn against cats, including Brahms. Brahms, at least for the modernist generation, seemed to be the one you were really supposed to be tested by. If you took the Brahms test, well, I proved myself to be a victim of Brahms and not have the taste to remove myself from that. So, okay, so these are etudes, transcriptions. By 19th century Duncan. One. We will endeavor, the word aiding us from heaven, to be of service to the vernacular speech. Drafts of the sweetest honey milk from the language we first heard, endearments, whisperings, infant song and reverie, a world we wanted to go out into, to come to ourselves in, organizations and the sound of them, verging upon meaning, upon heaven. Hermetic talk into which my range of understandings was to grow for the love of it, portents. And adults expounding controversial doctrines, personal science fantasies, and rules of order. But our own is that which we acquire without any rule by imitating our nurses for the love of it. From the beginning, color and light, my nurse, sounding waves and air, my nurse, animal presences, my nurse, night, my nurse. Out of hunger, instinctual, craving, thirst for knowing, from oracular tits. This being primary, natural and common, milk is animal. Lungs sucking in the air, having heart in it, rhythmic and moving in measure, self-creative, in concert, and therein, noble. Two. Secondary is the grammar of constructions and uses, syntactic manipulations of the real, spellings and letterings of the word, progressions in writing, Egypt, conservations and disturbances of meaning. Professional, not noble, being learned, reflective, particular, rereading instead of memory, as if to mediate the immediate, needs prayer. Most folk don't get the hang of it. Mastering the techne comes here under steady and careful study of the work, ingenuity, wit, expenditure of much time and assiduous study that the structure of rhyme extend into the fit of parts at one's fingertips, gathering the thunderhead in which Zeus drives the measures. When the art is one of reading writing, there must be a grammary kept in which the old oracular voice returns. To fill the poet's throat in yearning, his heart in his mouth, at the tongue's tip in truth. Insufferable are those masters of grammar who have denied their illiterate nurses. Out of dried dugs of their own? Clonk, lightning. Three. I know a little language of my cat, though Dante says that animals have no need of speech, and nature abhors the superfluous. My cat is fluent. He converses when he wants with me. Talk is animal. And whales and wolves I've heard in choral soundings of the sea and air know harmony and have an eloquence that stirs my mind and heart. They touch the soul. Here, Dante's religion that would set man apart damns the effluence of our life from us to build therein its powerhouse. The word is incarnate and animal. It dies upon the air as the body dies. It needs the beat of the living heart to keep it alive. In truth, the word is all meat and animal. And speech, if it be profound, is everywhere in evolution. The secrets of our art from the beginning, we sound in ancient orderings of our chemistry. His senses quicken in the thick of the symphony, old circuits of animal rapture and alarm, attentions and arousals in which his advent still survives, and identity rearrives in his listening. He hears particular voices among voices, the slightest rustle in the undertones, rehearsing a nervous aptitude yet to prove his. He sees the flick of red within the rushing mass of ruddy wilderness, and catches the glow of a green shirt to delight him in a glowing field of green. The rainbow from the heart of light articulates a promise he remembers. He picks up on the fugitive tang of mace amidst the savory mass, and taste in evolution is an everlasting key. There is a pun of sense in what makes sense. Myrrh it may have been, the odor of the word that filled the house. He wakes from deepest sleep upon a distant signal and waits as if crouching, springs to life. To speak my mind, unfold the secrets of the heart, breathe word of it, and take soundings in the passage out. Even as my hand writes, thumb and fingers hold the pen in attention, my whole life needs be here, to come alive in this consideration. These stars are fragrant, and I follow their scent. I am their hunting hound, predator of the marvelous. I try the qualities of the line, muttering to sound it. Divine the ratios, render, articulate. The actual progress of syllables. Keep alive in the sequence of vowels, l'arc en ciel marin of the covenant, song makes. As if from a flower releasing the music that I sense, a fragrance, a color in mind, into a moving pivot of the flood that comes to me, and promising, makes sense. Four. Everything speaks to me. In faith, my sight is sound. I draw from out the resounding mountainside the gist of majesty. It is at once a presentation out of space, awakening a spiritual enormity, And still, the sounding of a tone apart from any commitment to some scale. The sea comes in on rolling surfs of an insistent meaning, pounds the sands relentlessly, demanding a hearing. I overhear tides of myself all night in it. And in the sounds that lips and tongue and tunings of the vocal cords within the chamber of the mouth can send upon the air, I answer. It is my evocation of the sound I'd have returned to me. My world in speech answers some ultimate need I know. Aroused, pours forth upon the sands, again and ever again, lines written for the audience of the sea. Then what is listening? The ear imitates another listening in its inner labyrinth. Sounds alembic. Here. The equilibrations enter in. Here, the up and down, we know. So that tones are high and low, and words have weight in my hand as I write. The argument is in balance. There, where the tympanum translates, waves of the air, invisible, into resounding visibilities. The shores of the continent, eroded in listening to the sea. Whether in the way of a question, or in the way of an answer. The infant's wail begins in woe. Sensual murmurs and hummings at feeding time. And babblings to the world about in little streams of joy, shallows of talk with rills of laughter running through. Yet even then I think I knew thunderous tides of another kind. Therefore, since the air is made to undergo such great disturbances, in which God works, that it causes the thunder, the lightning flash, the pouring rain, and scatters snow, and hurls down hail, shall it not be moved to utter certain words, rendered distinct by him who has distinguished greater things? Five. Speech directed first of all to the Lord himself, outpouring, more to be heard than to hear, hearing and being heard. You, I know from other occasions, are apt to get caught up in one of your talking jags when you don't listen to anyone else and it becomes exhausting to listen to you. Still, he wished that man should also speak in order that, in the unfolding of so great a gift, he who had freely bestowed it might glory, that we rejoice in the well-ordered play of our emotions. A hearing. Without paradise, a talking jack. But the place of his first speech was within. Six. But we, to whom the world is, our native country, just as the sea is to the fish. Though we love our birthplace so dearly that for the love we bear her, we are in exile. And our native speech. Seven. Enriched in the increment of associations, I would go abroad to speculate upon the ultimate. the goal of the entire civilization of the human species. Not man's domestication, his being housebroken, but civilization, his breakthrough for the city's sake, for the present state of the city. The first principle and cause of the whole thing governing throughout his doing, taking thought of the totality in what he is doing. A man with a cause. I had a request, and then I will read, following this poem, an interlude, I will read then a prose poem called The Museum, and close with a very short poem that may lift the mood of the museum. An interlude. My heart beats to the feet of the first faithful long ago dancing in Brasiliander's forest, and my mind, when it ceases to contend with the lies and dreams of Generalissimo Franco, delights in the company of defeated but glorious men who have taken to the highlands or, in love with the people, striven to keep secret ways of brotherhood and compassion alive, spreading truth like seeds of a forbidden hallucinogen, marijuana or morning glory hidden away among the grasses. The field. Love long concealed, love long suffering, love we never knew, moved us from the beginning. Now it may be we are driven to your high pasture, hard pressed. My heart opens as if there were a pass in the rock, unknown, a bypass, close enough to be very like death. Solitary door, road of solitude. The mute song at last sung in the veins among strangers. I must go to the old inn in the canyon beyond us, to the roller skating rink among the pine trees. For the dancers have come down from the mountains, and the piano player strikes up such a sound, the fiddler sails away in the waving and waist-clasping rounds of it. The people, then, are the people of a summer's night over and gone, the people of a Polish dance hall before the last war, the reek and sweat of Limburger cheese and Bermuda onions, sweltering in beer and music, Kansas country evangels or summer people in the Catskills who have taken up square dancing as the poet takes up measures of an old intoxication that leads into poetry. Not square dancing, but moving figures, the ages and various personae of the old drama. Coupling and released from coupling, moving and removing themselves, bowing and escaping into new and yet old configurations. The word old appearing and reappearing in the minds of the youths dancing. So that I remember I was an ancient man in that part of the dance. Grandpa, I was 19 and yet 90, taking the hand of little Nell Dulcidoing. And the dance, the grand seance of romancing feet in their numbers. Forward and back, we were the medium for the folk of the old days and their ever returning. In the great figure of many figures, the four directions and empires change into four times, and opposites of opposites meet and mate, separating and joining, ascending a ladder of litanies until they are sent, losing themselves in each other's being, found again. Now, because I am fire, you are water. Water and fire kiss and embrace. Water and fire dance together. This, the grand mimesis, imitates the wholeness we feel true to what is. We must go back to sets of simple things, hill and stream, woods and the sea beyond. The time of day, dawn, noon, bright or clouded, 5 o'clock in November, 5 o'clock of the year, changing definitions of the light. And say the dancers take the 6 unbroken lines of the Chinese hexagram, and 6 dance with the 6 broken lines. The 6 gates are openings in the otherwise stable figure. There are 12 in all, dividing into groups of 3, they dance in 4 groups. What 12 things of your world will you appoint guardian? truth's signatories. Salt, Cordelia said, gold and lead. The poet, the great maker of wars and states, and the saint, Burckhardt named, as the three creative masters of history. But now let the 12 be unnamed. The dancers come forward to represent unclaimed things. The museum. Grand architecture that the muses command, my heart and breathing lungs mount the ascending tones in which your pillars swell, sound, and soar above the struggling mind. In the treasure room enclosed in sound, muse upon muse turns to gaze into the radiant space in building. In certain designs they are most present, and in their presence I come, I realize, into their design. What I see now is a shadowed space, a shell in time, a silent alcove in thunder, in which the stony everlasting gaze loses itself from my coming into its plan. It is an horizon coming in from what we cannot see to sound in sight that is female, moving toward an horizon of the visible. From this carving out in thought of an arrival, the figure of a womanly grace invades the sound of the heart that beats for her, and, in number, repeats in a run of alcoves, shadowed radiance upon shadowed radiance, beyond the body of this woman, the body of these women. In the museum, as in the labyrinth of Knossos the Minotaur, as in the head of the great god, the hawk Horus returning, a woman that is a company of women, moves. She will not devour the heart, but holds it high in her command. The shadow she stands in is the shadowing of the heart's ease. Yet now, in an exaltation of this chamber, my mind comes upon the bestial muse, the devouring imperatrice at the heart of the museum. In the inner chambers of the heart of the building, the fountains of blood are all there is, and the laboring pump she hides there, and the locks and releases hidden there. I am entirely hers in that confessional, entirely shadowed, entirely gazing, a root of seeing carved in stone, a stream of utter weeping in that stone suspended. And if I were a woman out of the man I am, a poetess would burst into her lament a memorial for the man destroyed in her. O muses, ancient and overwhelming sisters, we have so long played in whose orders you stand between us and our Father. You lead us on into this vale between slopes, flowery and sweet, where all our grievances and memories of love run into song. You come to meet us at the well you command in the midst of our thirst. You hold us in the suspension of your regard, and the smile of an appreciation we cannot fathom breaks away under us. In the halls of the museum, all that we meant to remember, our passionate resolve, our crying out and our murmurous sigh, falls into that fame that silences what we were. Was it fame, then, that we cried out for? Was it fame that we protested? O muses, awful and brilliant, in your drawing us toward that grace in which the spine is curved into life to sound the depths of its death in fame, your fame catches my tears in its resounding cistern, and every mammal weeping I hear, drip upon drip, as if alone, resounding there. And birds and reptiles weeping, cell upon cell, in each this shadow, in each this muse of a commanding art, in each this falling into time, drop by drop, in each this eternal gaze, in each, this ultimate woman. In each, this guile without guile, the artful suggestion glancing, the terrible amusement, call to grace that is drawn to dance upon hurt once more. Now, deep, deep down in the underground of restraint, a bass intoning of a man begins. Wondrous in its progression, male, its thunderous resolve of a commanding sorrow. It is the man that men and women have dreamt deep in themselves to be their species. For I came from the body of woman into the thought of man. And all of darkness, that man in the light of being groans and turns upon himself. A challenging tone that begins and passes into the arrest of challenge. O mighty worm that in the cocoon of what is slumbers. As you turn and intone your turning, the great women in the hall of the muses appear to be statues groaning. The poets whimper in their sheltering shadows. And from their altars, poetesses advance to sing once more as Sappho sang from the lyric strain, that love that breaks us from what we are. Irresistible force, bitter, sweet, that even now strikes us down. You have awakened what we feared we were, and men and women, we are lost in you. Pain enters being, drop by drop. The earth in its deep foundation shakes and tears the bindings of ancient structures loose. The muses appear to be now deserted cisterns in a row. Was there in the beginning some vow I made that has come due? I know no more of art than this. A kind of play that when I was a child was fearful in its promise and yet led from fear into a radiance, a brother's turning for a sister's kiss. The muses fade into dim images. The images fade as if I made them up and came out of making into a loss of confidence. And now, now, the poem sounds its refrain in time. There cometh now, as if it were an ancient return to rhyme, behind and beneath the man I am, the sounding of another man I am, man in me, alone, his ultimate aloneness invading my own utter aloneness in my time. His promise, the promise of what man is in me, reaches up and takes into itself as a persisting need that dimness of the other side. And him, the gathering of shadowy muses, shakes. It is the architecture then of arts inspired by confidences of an earthquake yet to come. The muses are of stone to be riven from stone. And they gaze. It is the vision of this very art in which out of no confidence their confidential song comes into me. Into the abyss they gaze, into which the museum falls. Close with one short poem. And hell is the realm of God's self-loathing. And hell is the realm of God's self-loathing. It burns me up to see the way he thrives in cheating. Looks into what mirror to see what burning face? In error, I had thought my own, what I could own. Through all the torture overtaking me in passing, another flower, not of evil, shone. So.